Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Author Chat, hosted by Elizabeth Kelly. In each episode, we talk with writers about their recent work. What inspired them? What challenges did they face? And what impact will their work have on your life?
Welcome to Author Chat. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today we
You're
are
listening
honored
to Author
have
Chat,
with us.
Hosted by Elizabeth Kelly. In each episode, we talk with writers about their recent work. What inspired them? What challenges did they face? And what impact will their work have on your life? You're listening to Author Chat, hosted by Elizabeth Kelly. In each episode, we talk with writers about their recent work. What inspired them? What challenges did they face? And what impact will their work have on your life?
Hello to all of my listeners, and I apologize for the technical difficulties. If you liked hearing our introductory music once, I'm sure you liked it even more once you heard it three times. In any event, we are honored to have with us today Bernard B. Carrick, former New York City Police Commissioner, to talk with us about his compelling new book, From Jailer to Jail, My Journey from Correction and Police Commissioner to Inmate Number 84888-054. Welcome, Mr. Carrick. Mr. Carrick, hello? Oh, dear. Well, I see him in the queue, but in any event, we don't seem to have him on now. In any event, we are going to be joined, I hope momentarily, by Mr. Carrick to talk about his new book. This is a tell-all, riveting book that recounts his career in law enforcement through his nomination as President George Bush's Secretary of Homeland Security to his indictment and incarceration. He was indicted on approximately 16 federal counts after a lengthy grand jury investigation. Parenthetically, prior to this investigation, he had already pled guilty to a charge in state court in New York City. Mr. Carrick, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
There you are. I apologize for the many technical difficulties. In any event, I was setting up the scene for our listeners who haven't followed your case. I explained that you were indicted on a number of federal charges after a lengthy grand jury investigation. You had previously pled guilty to a misdemeanor in state court. You eventually pled guilty and were sentenced to 48 months. And you served a substantial portion of that sentence at Cumberland Correctional Institution in the state of Maryland. So, Mr. Carrick, let's get into the guts of your book. Why did you plead guilty to something you feel you did not do?
Well, look, at the end of the day, I think it's a business decision. My legal bills were mounting at a rate of $150,000 to $200,000 a month in October of 2009, when the federal judge in my case said that he was inclined to disqualify my attorneys, my legal team, for the second time. And I had already lost three attorneys. This time, that month, October of 2009, my legal bill for 30 days was $476,000 per month, 1 month. I want to be clear. I've made mistakes. There were things that, you know, I should have paid attention to and I should have done correctly. I should have had more focus on. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty convinced, especially given what's going on today and what's happened in the past with presidential cabinet nominees, there's no doubt in my mind that my charges and the things against me could have been handled civilly and ethically. In fact, as you said, I had already pled guilty to two ethics violations in the Bronx State Court. I paid a $221,000 fine, and I was told by the Bronx DA, and I was told by my attorney that it was over, that the investigation was over. Pay the fine, plead guilty, and move on with your life. And the reality was basically just a setup for the federal government to come in and start all over again. And this time, they went back and charged me relating to some of the same stuff, plus my nanny issue. I hired a domestic servant and nanny that I had not paid payroll tax on. I paid cash over about a two-year period, who happened to be in the country illegally. So that being the case, I eventually pled guilty to 8 felony counts, was sentenced to 4 years, and served 3 years and 11 days in federal prison.
You remember each and every hour. If you just tuned in, we're talking with Bernard B. Carrick. Mr. Carrick is the former New York City Police Commissioner, and we're talking with him about his important and compelling and revealing new book, From Jailer to Jailed, My Journey from Correction and Police Commissioner to Inmate Number 84888-054. Now, Mr. Carrick, as you probably know, another New Yorker, Loretta Lynch, was confirmed yesterday by the Senate for United States Attorney General. If you had an opportunity to talk with Attorney General Lynch about the type of reforms that the criminal justice system in America should make, what would be the top three items on your list?
Well, first of all, I know Loretta Lynch. I've worked with her as a drug agent back in the 90s, and I also worked with her when I was the police commissioner. And I personally, it is my own personal opinion, I think the president made a good choice.
Okay.
That being said, if I had the opportunity to talk to her about the present criminal justice system, one, the sentencing guidelines and the mandatory minimums have to be revamped, repealed, or eliminated. Judges have to have the right to judge. The sentences as they stand today are draconian. We have evolved into a society where we're now legalizing marijuana in many states, and we're still sentencing people. We have a judge, a federal judge, that sentenced somebody to 55 years for selling marijuana out in Utah, and the sentence was so horrendous that the judge himself said that it was draconian, that it shouldn't have happened. But he had no ability to do anything about it. And that's because of the sentencing guidelines and the mandatory minimum. So that's number one. Number two, within our criminal justice system, we need real programs that's going to help men and women transition back into society as better people. Real programs. Knitting, crocheting, chess, quilting, checkers are not adult continuing education classes. We have inmates that are convicted of real estate crimes. They go to prison, and then they teach adult continuing education classes to other inmates. What do they teach? Real estate. Well, there's two issues. One, you just convicted this guy of real estate fraud. Now he's teaching real estate to 30 convicted felons, and that in itself is bad enough. But the reality is, you could teach these guys all the real estate you want. They can never, ever, for the rest of their lives, get a real estate license because they're now convicted felons. So it's a complete fraud. This whole, we're programming inmates. It's not a realistic venue. So that's number two. Number three, at some point in time, a convicted felon, no matter what his crime, unless under the most extreme circumstances, has to be able to end his debt to society, because as it stands today, your debt to society is never paid. You are punished eternally until the day you die. And I've met men, a guy that sold a whale's tooth on eBay, and he's a convicted felon because of it. He's going to have collateral, professional, personal, family destruction until the day he dies because of that felony conviction. young men, you know, 19, 20 years old, first time, low level, nonviolent drug offenders, nonviolent, 10 years, 15 years in prison. You turn them into animals. You turn them into monsters. You teach them everything they need to know about criminality and thuggery. These are guys that never had a problem with the law, had no violence. We turn them into monsters. We send them back into the communities, and then we want to know why the recidivism rate isn't dropping. At some point in time, those kids need to be taught respect and discipline, job skills, life improvement skills, and we have to, at some point, if they do what they're supposed to do, diminish their conviction, get rid of it, because we are creating a permanent underclass, a permanent second-class citizen in this country by the millions, by the millions. And that means all those people get pulled out of the workforce, because once you're a convicted felon, you can't find a job. Nobody's going to hire you. So I think the mission statement for the entire criminal justice system contradicts itself in what we don't do when we're supposed to do it.
All of that is great stuff, but a cynical person might say, Mr. Carrick, hey, for a very long time, you yourself were part of the prison pipeline. You arrested people. You helped with their charges. You put them behind bars. Who are you to talk? How would you respond to that person?
Well, there's nobody better to talk about it than I am, and here's why. I put a lot of people in prison. I put bad people that did bad things in prison, guys that tried to kill me, men that killed other men I worked with, mass murdered other people, cartel leaders, cop killers, people I seized tons of cocaine with, millions in drug proceeds. I have no problem with the people I put in prison. But then when I went to prison, I realized we're putting thousands upon thousands of people in prison a year that didn't need prison to pay for mistakes. We're taking people for ethics violations and civil violations and regulatory violations, and we're turning all that into criminal conduct. And I can tell you, not only did I not know it, but I can promise you that every police administrator in this country that I have talked to since, they didn't know it neither. There's no way to know it unless you're on the inside. So either fortunately or unfortunately, I've been given opportunity to have a very one-of-a-kind, unique experience. Keep in mind, no one in this country ever, with my background and experience in running both two of the largest law enforcement organizations in this country, and with unparalleled success in jail and prison management when I oversaw Rikers Island, no one has ever been on the inside. No one. And it wasn't until I got on the inside that I could see this.
You point to many much-needed reforms, not only in your book, but during the course of your radio, including ending the sentencing guidelines and mandatory minimums. But do we really have the political will in this country to make sweeping changes like that?
You know, honestly, until the last 2 years, I'd say it wasn't a substantial focus by members in Congress. But it was a focus over the last 4 or 5 years in state prisons, in state criminal justice systems, and here's why. A state criminal justice system, or New York City's criminal justice system, which is one of the largest in the country, you have a budget. You have to live within your means. You have to live within a budget. Well, if you keep warehousing human beings and mass incarcerating at the rate we're going, those state budgets, they're never going to stay within the budget. Never, ever. It's impossible. So they had to come up with alternatives to incarceration. They had to do evaluations of their own criminal justice systems. And listen, if a state like Texas, Governor Perry over the last 3 or 4 years closed down 2 or 3 prisons, went to alternatives to incarceration, implemented another number of programs to better the system and transition back into the community. And if the state of Texas can do it, the law and order capital of the world, so-called, if they can do it, then every other state can do it as well. More importantly, the federal government has to do it. because the sentencing guidelines and mandatory minimums in the federal government are far more draconian than state penalties, number one. And number two, the federal dollars that we're putting into the system has tripled. Forget tripled. Think of it this way. In 1980, there were 25,000 men and women in the federal prison system. Today, there's 218,000. It's about an 800% increase over 30 years. That money, we are spending more money than we ever have on mass incarceration, and on top of that, we're losing billions, and I mean tens of billions of dollars a year over the reported cost of incarceration by pulling people out of the workforce that were good working people that paid taxes, took care of their families, took care of their children, were pillars in the community because they made regulatory, ethical, and civil violations. So,
not to mention the human costs of incarceration. Final question for you, Mr. Carrick. What are you doing now? And more importantly, what's it like to be home?
Listen, as far as what I'm doing now, I'm focused on, trying to get people to read my book. And I know there's people out there that are saying, this is all about selling his book. No. In order for me to recoup just a partial of my losses over the last 10 years, I'd have to sell more copies of this book than the Bible. So that's never happening. This isn't about money. This is about educating the American public. It's about educating the public because nobody in this country is going to care about something that they don't understand, and nobody's going to ask for it to be fixed if they don't know it's broken. I want to educate the American public. I want to push the legislators to do what has to be done. I want the American public to go to their congressman and just ask one question. How is it physically possible that we, the United States of America, is 5% of the whole world's population, this country, yet we house and hold 25% of the world's prisoners? How is it possible that we have more prisoners in this country in prison today than Russia and China? How's that possible? It's a completely failed system in which we are taking people that don't need to be imprisoned and locking them up, destroying communities, destroying the economy, destroying them. And I want to make this clear. Bad people that do bad things, they belong in prison. You have to protect society. But commercial fishermen that caught too many fish, a guy that sells a whale's tooth on eBay, a young man that's trying to buy his first home for his new bride and himself and enhances his income on his mortgage application, he gets sentenced to federal prison. I don't think anybody has any idea what we're locking these people up for. And I think
point very, very well taken, and we need to end it there. But we thank you so much for joining us here on Author Chats. We've been talking with Bernard B. Carrick about his important new book, From Jailer to Jailed, My Journey from Correction and Police Commissioner to Inmate Number 84888-054. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Carrick, and thank you to all of our listeners. Goodbye.